Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 2nd, 2016. South Sudan's information minister chastises JMAC for saying the country is on the verge of collapse.
I think there is something wrong with JMAC. JMAC must prove itself to be a joint monitoring and evaluation commission, must prove itself to be a joint body. Otherwise, JMAC in its current situation is useless.
And the former SPLM Secretary General says the leadership of South Sudan should be handed over to technocrats.
The least costly alternative for South Sudan is a regional and international intervention to stabilize and pacify South Sudan and return it back to normalcy.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's government spokesman describes the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, also known as JMAC, as useless, after the monitoring body said the peace deal was on the verge of collapse. JMAC Chief Festus Mohai recently met with representatives of countries who have supported South Sudan's peace deal and called for quick intervention to prevent the deal from falling apart. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Festus Mogai convened a meeting in Khartoum over the weekend to discuss the latest disturbing events in South Sudan and the possible deployment of regional force to protect civilians and prevent further bloodshed. Government spokesman Michael Makwe lashed out at JMAC for saying that South Sudanese peace agreement is on the verge of collapse as reports of fighting continues this week in Equatoria and Nasiri.
I think there is something wrong with JMAC. JMAC must prove itself to be a joint monitoring and evaluation commission, must prove itself to be a joint body. Otherwise, JMAC in its current situation is useless and will not serve the interests of South Sudan, will not help in the implementation of the agreement.
Yesterday, the head of the opposition Democratic Change Party, Lama Kole, resigned from the transitional government of national unity as agriculture and food security minister, saying the peace deal has collapsed. Makwe says whoever declares that the peace deal has fallen apart is really calling for a regime change.
Dr. Lama Kole declared in his paper that the peace agreement has collapsed. We will prove to him that he is the one who has collapsed, not the agreement. He has been carried away by his ambitions. And I'm sure if he were to continue, Hatta, even if we make Riek Machar the president today, Lama Kole will fight him. Because Lama Kole has his own ambition of becoming a president of South Sudan, the same thing with Riek Machar. And the two cannot go together. They only agree when they are not in power, but once they are in power, they disagree.
Makwe warns that South Sudan will abandon the Regional Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, if it continues to interfere with South Sudan's internal affairs by calling for the deployment of foreign troops.
They must be very careful with their behavior, with their conduct, with their outlook at other member states like South Sudan. South Sudan is a member of IGAD. It voluntarily decided to apply for membership. And it is free, it can move out at any time if it so decides.
The peace partners who met in Khartoum are recommending that JMAC remain in charge of the situation in South Sudan and to take all necessary measures to ensure full implementation and adherence by both sides to the peace deal. Makwe charges there are some countries working for the downfall of South Sudan.
Let us resolve our problems amicably and not through the use of force, or not to be used by others to serve their objectives. We know, yes, there are certain countries in this world that do not want South Sudan. There are certain countries in this world that have their own interests in South Sudan.
Makwe did not name names. Fighting ragged across the capital Juba for 4 days before ending on July 11th when both President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar declared a ceasefire. The violent clashes claimed more than 300 lives and displaced tens of thousands of Juba residents, some of whom remain in neighboring Uganda. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Still on South Sudanese politics, the former Secretary General of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement has formed a new advocacy group to spearhead efforts to bring peace to South Sudan. Pagana Mum says South Sudan Reborn is a collective effort by friends of South Sudan to address the current crisis in the country. Amum says his organization wants the international community to take over South Sudan in order to save it from collapsing.
It is a platform for advocacy and education to campaign for the rescue of South Sudan and preventing it from collapsing into chaos and disorder. It is a campaign to engage the region where South Sudan is, the IGAD region, the African continent, the United States of America, UK, Norway, and other members of IGAD partners group, as well as the international community at large, to come to the rescue of South Sudan. The purpose is to achieve peace and stability in South Sudan. The purpose is to bring this chaos and violence to an end through calling on the United Nations to take over South Sudan.
Yes, let me take you back to your comments about the United Nations taking over the country. I remember earlier last month, the UN Secretary General was on record saying that the leadership of the country have failed to resolve the crisis in the country. In your own opinion, what is the alternative? I mean, you have been heavily involved in South Sudanese politics throughout your life. What is the alternative?
South Sudanese leadership, particularly President Salva Kiir Mayardit, but also Riek Machar, as well as all the political forces in the country, we have failed to solve the problem. President Salva Kiir took the country to a civil war, which he made very brutal and tribalistic, and now the genie is out of the bottle and it is out of control. And President Salva Kiir himself has miserably failed to take the country back to peace because he is himself against peace. The way forward, the least costly alternative for South Sudan is a regional and international intervention to stabilize and pacify South Sudan and return it back to normalcy.
But that sounds like a temporary solution because I've been following the South Sudanese politics. My own assessment is that Dr. Riek Machar has a big appetite for power, for the presidency. And Lamar Kol also has shown appetite for that seat. And you at some point were accused of showing your appetite for that position. When you say President Kiir must step down, who is the ideal person to replace him or to lead South Sudan out of this crisis?
It is time for all those who are in power politically and those who are intending to go to power or to assume elected position to step aside, all of them. And the alternative, the least costly alternative, is a technocratic government of professional South Sudanese who would be able to stabilize the country, pacify it, and build the institutions of governance and prepare the country or the people to elect their government at the end of the transition. All this would be with the support of United Nations and the region.
This is happening.
And take the country into normal.
Yes, Pagan, this is happening in a country where there is a widespread, if you like, of formation of tribal militias who are allied to their leaders. Dr. Riek Machar has his forces predominantly from his tribe. And you have President Kiir here also having the South Sudan Army, which the international community and other experts in the region are saying it's not an army, but a fragmentation of tribal groups that are allied to several commanders in the army. And you have other people, other leaders who are also having their, you know, militias there. How do you foresee a situation where power will be handed over to technocrats who have no military?
You are right. The situation now is that you have tribal forces fighting each other, whether in was led by Kiir and Malone, or led by Riek Machar, or led by others, including there are other forces in Khartoum and other parts of South Sudan, which are also tribal, responding to President Kiir and his tribal forces that are attempting to impose a tribalist hegemony in the country. This is a dangerous situation because it is leading to disintegration of South Sudanese young state.
That's Pagan Amum, former Secretary General of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement and a spokesman for the now South Sudan Reborn, a nonprofit advocacy group in the United States. He was speaking to me from Denver, Colorado earlier today. South Sudan in Focus made repeated calls to Wek Ateng, the presidential spokesperson in South Sudan, for comments on Pagan's allegation, but Ateng did not pick our calls. Ambassador Robin Sanders, a former two-time director for Africa at the National Security Council at the White House, says former Vice President Riek Machar still has a lot of influence in the political and security circles of South Sudan. Sanders says it would be wise for regional and international bodies to include Machar in talks about sending regional forces to South Sudan as proposed by IGAD and the African Union. At the same time, Sanders says Machar should urge his forces to adhere to international human rights laws.
I'm hoping that, IGAD and the African Union, you know, with help from the friends like the United States, like the United Nations, can find a way to have a conversation with all the stakeholders. Everybody has to be part of it. Everybody has to find a consensus. Everybody's not going to get what they want. In order to have compromise and move forward, you're going to have to give and take a little bit. But the priority has to be the people of South Sudan.
The African Union has chimed in on the UN's call to send a regional force to South Sudan. What are some of the pros and cons of sending a regional force into South Sudan?
Well, I think the first one, certainly coming out of the African Union meeting in Kigali, was that Kiir said didn't want any more foreign troops. And I think that's a problem. That's the second time, you know, in the span of 12 months that you had an African leader, Burundi was the other one, saying we don't want any more foreign troops. We're going to look at that as an act of war or an act of aggression. That is a new dynamic. And what is actually driving that? That is actually worrisome. And I think somebody, you know, needs to be looking at that at a more strategic level. Because if that is the trend, then we really are in for a very difficult environment on the continent overall. That being said, though, I do think the way forward has to include those elements. Because if you have such tension at the leadership level, the only way to dampen down those tensions is really to find a neutral element to come in. And sometimes that's African Union under a UN mandate, or sometimes that's African Union troops under an AU mandate to do that. And so I'm supportive of that. But maybe what they could look at is concurrent paths, one that includes an additional amount of troops coming in to provide a buffer zone, at least to protect the civilians, to give a little bit of space to dampen down the tension. That would be one. And concurrently with that, bring all the stakeholders together under IGAD, under AU, hopefully with, friends like the U.S. and the United Nations, you know, being able to find a peace dialogue out of that. What elements can they save from the previous peace agreement, or can they salvage even the previous peace agreement? That's number one. If they can't, what elements of that can they take from there and then address some of the current issues?
Talk to me about what the Africa desk at the National Security Council might be thinking. What are some of the things that they might be planning for or addressing within the council in regards to South Sudan?
I would assume that they are analyzing along the same lines that I just presented to you. You know, what can we do to dampen down the tension? What can we do? We have a nation just 5 years old, one that we supported In terms of its development, one that we've put a lot of resources in. So I think they're looking at all the same things that I pointed out to you, finding a way to concurrently have a number of things. You know, what can we salvage from the peace agreement, if anything? What can we bring in new? And then you have other stakeholders on the ground. You've got, you know, non-governmental organizations. You've got South Sudanese stakeholders as well. Everyone trying to figure out, most importantly, how do we dampen down the environment so that you don't have fighting in the streets and you don't have additional refugees flowing into Uganda.
That's Robin Sanders, former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria and the Republic of Congo. She also served as director for Africa at the U.S. National Security Council. She was speaking to Ayen Bior from Washington. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's new finance minister promises sweeping reforms. More on that when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you sing a little bit of your favorite song?
Because my voice is not good like that. For Juliana. Yeah, Juliana Kanyomozi. During that time, I had a girlfriend and she just left me. So it reminds me of those days.
Asoroni. Asasi ya fo udi kro riye na ngwe juma.
It's our own composition. We sing it in the choir, and here it goes. For the Lord is good all the time. The Lord is caring.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about breastfeeding. UNICEF warns that 77 million babies deprived of mother's milk within first crucial hours after birth are at risk of dying within a month. To mark World Breastfeeding Week this week, UNICEF and the World Health Organization are calling on newborns to be breastfed exclusively for 6 months. Lisa Schlein has the details for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund says newborns should be breastfed within the first hour of life. This provides them with the essential nutrients, antibodies, and skin-to-skin contact with their mother that protects them from disease and death. UNICEF reports the longer breastfeeding is delayed, the higher the risk of death in the first month of life. It warns delaying breastfeeding by 24 or more hours after birth increases that risk to 80%. On the other hand, it notes more than 800,000 lives would be saved if all babies were fed nothing but mother's milk from the moment they were born until 6 months of age. Unfortunately, the World Health Organization says this message is slow in getting through. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says new mothers are not receiving the support and encouragement they need to breastfeed their babies.
The slogan this year is breastfeed anywhere, anytime, because it's also, as I said, the role of society to make this possible for mothers who want to breastfeed. This being said, yes, it's an old problem. We have always been advocating for more breastfeeding because we are convinced of the benefit of breastfeeding. It's really the ideal food for infant.
For example, she says breastfeeding protects children against many common illnesses. Breastfed children perform better on intelligence tests, are less likely to be overweight or obese, and less prone to diabetes later in life. Shaib tells VOA that inappropriate marketing of infant formula continues to undermine efforts to get women to breastfeed their babies.
And what we are not against them producing this kind of milk. What we are against is the fact that they promote it as if it is the same value that the milk of the mother. It's a lie. It's not the same.
Progress in getting more newborns breastfed within the first hour of life has been slow over the past 15 years. Surveys show in sub-Saharan Africa, where under 5 mortality rates are the highest in the world, early breastfeeding rates have remained unchanged. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan's new finance minister, Stephen Diu Dao, says he will immediately introduce reforms to turn around the country's economic crisis. Dao plans to screen all government payrolls to eliminate a known number of the so-called ghost workers and find other ways to save money. The finance ministry is among several government institutions that must be reformed under the terms of the August peace agreement. Tito Justin has this report for VOA from Juba.
When our economy is at the brink, as such, we have the daunting task of turning things around together as a team in order to give our people hope again.
That is Stephen Diu Dao, South Sudan's Finance and Economic Planning Minister, speaking to reporters in Juba today directly following a ceremony welcoming him to his new assignment. Dao says he is well aware of the public outcry over skyrocketing prices for basic commodities, including food. He also admits the government has failed to promptly pay civil servants and armed forces their salaries.
This indicates that public expectation is very high. It's very highly on us to improve the management and administration of the financial sector and improve the current economic situation in the country. We must also take note that all arms of the government of the Republic of South Sudan, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary, are looking upon us to turn things around.
The government is so broke that in June it cancelled the 5th Independence Anniversary celebrations, saying the money would be used instead to make back payments on civil servant salaries. In addition, the government also said it would restrict the number of foreign trips taken by ministers in the transitional government of national unity. Dao says he knows the government must be more transparent and accountable on its public finances. Critics have said for years that corruption is widespread in the government. Dao says he will adopt international standards in the financial sector and outlined measures he intends to undertake to improve the government's transparency.
The immediate establishment of the National Revenue Authority to improve public revenue collection and management. Work closely with international partners on capacity building and economic reform programs.
The country's lawmakers have yet to approve a budget that covers public institutions since the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity in April. Dao says South Sudan's leaders must work together to repair the country's collapsing economy.
Yes, I'm not coming with a miracle. This time, if we want to be a nation that has the future, that has won the independence based on a great sacrifices, then we have to change things from now.
Earlier this year, economists and NGOs warned that South Sudan's economy was on the verge of collapse due in large part to its heavy dependence on oil. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
We now move to Sudan, where the United Nations Development Programme and the European Union delegation has established the Darfur Internal Dialogue consultations aimed at reconciling different tribal communities of Darfur and implement new development projects. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Tijani Sisi, chairman of the Darfur Regional Authority, says the region is bitterly divided along ethnic lines because the war that started in 2003 pitted tribes against each other. Sisi says certain Arab tribes have been allied with the government against mostly African tribes who have supported rebel groups.
Since the war broke out in Darfur, the communities have been divided apart. There's a great deal of polarization among the communities in Darfur. That has started along ethnic lines first, and then it went down along tribal lines all the way to the clans.
Sisi says the communities of Darfur must talk and reconcile with each other so as to heal the wounds caused by the conflict and move forward as a united people.
There is a need for a debate and consultations among the people of Darfur to at least mend their social relations and to take the region back to cohesiveness. The DIDC was the instrument that we have agreed on, and it has become an integral part of the DDPD.
Selva Ramachandran, country director of the United Nations Development Program, or UNDP, in Sudan, says aside from engaging the communities in political dialogue, development projects can bring peace in Darfur. Ramachandran says the UNDP will take on that responsibility.
This political dialogue has to be accompanied by actual implementation of different activities. So from UNDP, being the development arm of the UN system, we focus on the development activities, and Darfur is a key priority for us.
Ramachandran says the UNDP will work with other donors to implement projects and help rebuild Darfur.
One key intervention is Darfur Livelihood Program, basically focusing on the livelihood dimension of people in Darfur, supporting youth so that they can be an entrepreneur, infrastructure, small-scale infrastructure project, issues related to migration, the conflict related to environment and the people at the local level, conflict resolution.
The European Union says it will contribute €800,000 to fund the Darfur Internal Dialogue and Consultations Program to be implemented by the United Nations African Union Mission in Darfur, or UNAMID. The Qatari and Sudanese governments are also funding the Darfur Internal Dialogue and Consultation Projects. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Public Enemy by South Sudanese reggae king Ras Corby.
Yes, that's the eye, the king of Israel, seen most I chose. Anytime righteousness and consciousness come forward, the people always want to kill it down scene. Bless the Most High, original rascal of life and direct, so Sudan is liberated. Yeah, watch it.
You call me a public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy.
Say, I'm not a Lebanese, a Japanese, a Chinese. I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese.
They call me a public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy.
See, anytime I wanna talk about my people's rights,
they call me a warrior.
Anytime I wanna talk about equal rights and justice,
they call me a criminal.
Don't forget about the facts and the present before you make your judgment.
Don't forget about the facts and the present before you make your judgment.
Do you remember the days of slavery when our forefathers were taken across the Atlantic? It was a pity. Hey. I heard about reparation.
Call me a public enemy,
this is what they call
them fighting.
just like the vision. And you still love me, son. That's your next mission.
We've been listening to Russ Corby with the song Public Enemy. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Now celebrate with the raindrop. Land of that green grass, please don't stop.
Did you not hear it down, Brother Moses? Who crossed the Red Sea with the children of Israel? Children.